We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to part one of our two-part preview on the series between the Lakers and the Nuggets. You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And guys, after last year's series, let's start with last season's series. That was a playoff run that was, I'll always hold that team in high regard. I thought they were a super resilient bunch. But by the time they got to the Western Conference Finals, they had been kind of figuring out who they were on the fly. It was a new group of guys, mostly put together at the trade deadline, figuring out, okay, Malik Beasley's starting to start out with. Then he ends up off the bench, then out of the rotation. Rui ends up getting a DNP against Chicago at one point for Lonnie Walker IV, ends up becoming a very key part of the series against Denver. Dennis Schroeder starts game one against Denver. And D, I'd love to start there, because I came away from that series with two impressions. One was that they were in a totally different weight class than we were in. And I don't know if we did enough to address that over the course of the summer. I think we actually took a different approach with more of an offensive type of tilt, which is something that we'll talk about over the course of these two podcasts. But also, I was really looking forward to the Lakers having a season under their belts with a training camp, a little more time to figure themselves out. I do think we left some meat on the bone in that respect by not going to the right lineups earlier. But the Lakers did get that, right? We're in the playoffs. We're at a point where it's going to take, we're going to have to get beat four times rather than a single elimination like the play-in. But it's the Denver Nuggets, right? I'm so glad that we have the chance to go up against them again and look for redemption. So talk to me, D, your first impressions about this series, because one of the things I came away with from watching all the tape yesterday was we were kind of a different thing every single time we played them over the course of this year and even going back into last. And so the Lakers know what they are a little bit more than any other point that they've played Denver. And I think that matters.
I hope it matters. Denver is a very well-known commodity. And I think this version of the Lakers is becoming a better known commodity, but is not yet all of the way there. I'm almost throwing out last season's series, the playoff series. The Lakers came off of the Warriors series and tried to use the same strategy against the Warriors, against the Nuggets, and it did not work. And by the time the Lakers got to the end of the Nuggets series, I think they started three different lineups in the four games that they played.
Mm-hmm.
There's two reasons for that. One, when you lose, you try to look for new solutions. But two, when you lose and you look for new solutions and you actually try to enact them, it's indicative of a team that is still not yet sure of what they actually have or what their base identity is against this specific team. And there's an idea, Mike, of being a shape-shifting team and a team that can like sort of morph and do different things in order to beat a singular opponent. But That is typically based off of a foundational idea of what you want to be night to night to night. And I actually don't think last season's Lakers accomplished that very often. And I think they mostly got by through the playoffs off the strength of high-level individual performances, the greatness of their star players, and honestly, a little bit of luck with the matchups and injuries and everything else. It's like a combination of all of these factors. That's not to diminish the run that they made. The run that they made was real. If the Lakers are going to make a run this season, it's going to start with the hardest opponent that they could possibly face. But I also think it's going to be grounded in something different, which is that this team over the last 8 to 12 weeks has formed an identity of what they want to be on a night-to-night basis. And injuries have disrupted that here or there, but the stability that they've had with LeBron and AD specifically, and D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves, and then after about the first part of February with Rui, they have decided this is what we're going to be on a night-to-night basis. And will the rest of the moving parts be moving parts? Sure. And here's a Spencer Dinwiddie now, or here's a Gabe Vincent now, and here's a little bit less Taurean Prince or more Taurean Prince. And oh, Cam's available. He's not available. Like, all of that stuff was there, but the five-man group plus Jackson Hayes plus Taurean Prince, it's just like, okay, this is what we are now. And I think that gives them a better runway into this series than what they had last season, when honestly, I thought that the Warrior series informed too much of what they thought their best players were.
Right.
Rather than allowing them to default to a standard that says, okay, that worked for them, but now we're going to go back to our base stuff.
To zoom out first in thinking about this series, last year's circumstances were different, and we're going to get into the matchups and everything, but this is just kind of the where the team's at mentally and physically and everything. So when the Lakers met the Nuggets in the conference finals, they had basically played 14 consecutive super meaningful games. That's actually discounting everything but the regular season finale. So you could go back and add 15 games to that if you wanted, but just to try and line up the schedule somewhat to Denver. So like the season finale against Utah, the Lakers have to win. The play-in is on April 11th, and then they go through Memphis and Golden State. Denver basically relaxes after the All-Star break, and rightfully so, because they're in the one seed and they're pretty safe in the one seed. So Denver doesn't play Jokic on, or he plays limited minutes on April 8th, and then nobody plays on April 9th, the regular season finale, and they get then a full week off before the Minnesota series. So that series goes 5, the Phoenix series goes 6, and then they're waiting between May 11th and May 16th to play the Lakers. And the issue, I think, once that series started, that series was every other day. And by that point, LeBron specifically, and AD to another extent, had just been at a certain level of exertion where I didn't feel like they were at their, you know, they were at full go. And it just was something that limited them. And this is, again, all from a Laker perspective. And it just, it, to me, though, was something that I noticed as the series went on. And it made me even think of the fourth quarter against New Orleans, as the Lakers were just kind of trying to hold on, and where LeBron's legs were after he had exerted so much defensively on Zion, not just in that game, but in the previous game, and just the buildup effect. And that, to me, since the bubble championship, is what's limited the Lakers a lot as these things have gone on. And this is the difference between year 21 LeBron and year 15 LeBron. And so to get Denver in round one gives the Lakers their best chance at competing with the Nuggets from a physical standpoint. By if they were going to go through the first two rounds again, and Denver, who has a younger Jokic still in his prime very much, Murray still in his prime very much, the rest of the roster still pretty young with Porter Jr. and KCP, and now they're young guys like Watson and Christian Brown. Like, all of these guys are, to me, have that advantage over the Lakers, because in crunch time, Jokic doesn't miss a beat. He doesn't skip a beat. The Nuggets have beaten the Lakers in crunch time after all of these games have been close. And so how do the Lakers have a chance to actually get to that point with more in the tank? It was by drawing them in this first round. Denver still has the advantages of the crunch time scoring, and because of what Jokic represents and because of who they are. But I do think that this gives the Lakers a more of a puncher's chance to not just win a game or two, but really be in the series. And who knows? Maybe the Nuggets have a tiny bit of adversity, you know, for the first time in the last couple of years, where maybe not necessarily from an injury standpoint, but maybe they just don't have every role player hit shots, which is what happened last year. If you go through and look at this, like who shot what in the conference finals, it's insane. And who shot what for them in the regular season this year, very little drop off. So that was the thing that stuck out to me the most in just looking at these, looking at the where the battery level is and the Lakers having one on Tuesday and getting these days to kind of charge up for Saturday, to me is of utmost importance. Does that give them all the matchup advantages? No, but at least gives them the best chance that they would have to face this Denver team.
Yeah, it's a much better starting place. Both LeBron and AD were dealing with lower leg injuries last year too, that both of which were, you know, we weren't sure if they were going to, those particular injuries were going to take them out for the whole year. And so they're in a better physical spot. Absolutely. I love that you brought that point up, Mike. And that point about, you know, them beating us in the crunch time, that's one of the things that stood out about playing them. There are a couple of teams. It's them, it's Sacramento, Dallas is another, where each of our games against them have a similar sort of ebb and flow. And even this year, D, all but the last matchup, Denver was usually ahead by quite a bit. And then we'd make a little run, get it kind of close, and then they'd close us out in crunch time, like Mike said. The last game was a little bit different, except for the closing us out in crunch time part, in that the Lakers were in control for the majority of it. And that was the first time that they had the current starting lineup play against Denver. The only major difference was Cam came off the bench and played 19 minutes, whereas that's probably going to be Gabe in that role this time as well. And so one of the interesting facts about this, and I'd love to kick off kind of the basketball discussion of this, is in that game, both starting fives scored over 100 points. Denver had 104 and the Lakers had 102 in that game. That was the game where Michael Porter Jr. went 10 for 10 from the field, 5 for 5 from three. That's one of the crazy games that Mike was talking about. But that was the closest we've gotten to kind of the version of the Lakers that they are now. They're still figuring out who they are, D, but that I'd love to start there with sort of the jumping off point with the starting fives. Denver and Boston is another team that fits this. The great Mike Garcia, one of his main basketball philosophies is the importance of your closing five and the primacy of it. And they just have a great starting and closing five. That talk about a team that knows who they are, D. That's a Denver team that really has gotten a ton of reps together and that poses a lot of problems. So let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about Denver's starting five.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm glad you brought up the starting fives, Pete, because this really is going to be a strength-on-strength team. The Lakers bench has not been a very productive bench, and both head coaches deploy their benches in ways of support of their stars and how many stars they can keep on the court at any given time to build out functional lineups that still play through those guys as the keys to those lineups. So let me kick this back to you. Did you want to start talking about the Lakers offense against Denver's defense in the context of the starters and how the Lakers can start to attack Denver's defense?
That sounds great. That sounds great to me, because I do think, to put it simply, Denver's offense, I don't think that there's any team in the league that can shut off their water. I think they're going to get good. Like, no matter what we do, there's ways to mitigate it and this and that. But I do think that to beat Denver, you have to be really good on the offensive end. And I do think that that's sort of the theory of the team, too, is that when the ball gets swung to Torian Prince rather than Dennis Schroeder, that's more likely to be that open three with a guy flying out to him. Whereas with Dennis, you can kind of cheat off of him a little bit. So I do think the Lakers' ability to score against them is going to be crucial as to whether or not we win this.
So let's start with matchups then. And I think, Mike, I'm going to kick it to you here for the first part of this discussion about matchups, because Denver is one of the few teams around the league that has a very big forward who is mobile and strong in Aaron Gordon to match up with LeBron, and a very big and sort of crafty center that has pretty good feet and has excellent hands and is just strong as an ox in Jokic to match up with Anthony Davis. And the Lakers are going to need to win offensive matchups against those players' defense if their offense is going to be successful, I think. And we can then talk about the importance of like how the guards can come into play and involving maybe Jamal Murray in some of these actions. But as on-ball scorers, which is a point that Pete's made a lot as well, the Lakers are, to a certain extent, going to live and die by how well their on-ball players can be on-ball players against a very good Denver defense. And so I kick it to you, Mike. In regards to those specific matchups, how important is it to you in terms of the jump shooting? How important is it to you in terms of their ability to still post up against very strong post-up defenders? How important is it to you that those guys are still the focal points of the offense? Or do you think the Lakers should start to shift things around a little bit and play more through the guards? And my entire premise is off base a little bit here.
I think that during the fourth quarter of that Pelicans game, and I'm watching it, and since it's not a Spectrum game, so I'm actually sitting next to Stu, which is amazing, because Stu is a great person to sit next to during a game, because all Stu's doing is watching the game. He's not taking his phone out. He's not doing anything else. He's watching the game.
The good old days.
And I meanwhile, I'm doing a couple things at once, you know. So even in this case, I'm doing a little bit less of looking at my computer and tweeting and stuff than usual, because I don't have to try to supplement the TV broadcast. So I'm mostly watching the game as well. But at times then I'll look down and I'll tweet or I'll look up a stat. And so we don't have a monitor though. So I have on my computer screen, I've got the game playing back, and it's on TNT, like the Watch TNT app delay by a minute. So, and we're up at the top of the lower bowl and the game's going on. And then it's basically serving as like a live replay thing. And so Stu and I, well, you know, we're watching it from afar and you kind of get this perspective from up top. And then the replay comes on, and watching it with Stu and just kind of talking things back and forth. And so it was a really good viewing experience for me. And, you know, without speaking for Stu, just you could see how things were starting to go as LeBron and AD wore down as the game went on. And how could they not have? Like, it was a long trip, as LeBron mentioned. Not only was it the previous game against New Orleans, where the Lakers gave really a heavyweight punching match that the Lakers had the better of, but they had come from a Memphis game where they had to exert a lot against a team that I was talking to somebody from Memphis, and that was like the hardest and best that Memphis had played in months. And like, they were super proud of that effort. Yeah. And they were not like, Chris Vernon said on his show, Memphis didn't come away from that being like, what's wrong with the Lakers? They're like, wow, we played amazing. Like, we're flying all over the place. And I thought that was miscast as some, like, the Lakers were playing with their food. Remember, we got into it a little bit about that. Like, they were really feeling great about their energy level. And so this is my point. The Lakers have been exerting themselves a lot. And then to get to kind of where Darius is going, watching what it looks like when LeBron and AD and the offense sort of stops and it just sort of devolves, and it's mismatch hunting and it's ISO play and trying to get by a guy. And I just don't think that is super sustainable against Denver. Because of Jokic waiting inside, because of Aaron Gordon, I think that with what they could do, Denver's got KCP, who's excellent on the perimeter, but this is not a team that you can't get after on the perimeter with your guards. They don't have a lockdown guard defender. Now, maybe if Peyton Watson can show that and all of a sudden start to switch out, I see him more as a threat, kind of like on the last line, protecting the rim with his length and maybe guarding LeBron more. And they don't have Bruce Brown to deploy. And Bruce Brown is the main reason that D'Lo, I think, struggled in last year's situation. So it's Jamal Murray and it's Christian Brown coming off the bench. It's Reggie Jackson coming off the bench. Of course, KCP being at the top of that. That to me is the way to attack them. And I don't know exactly what that looks like. I don't know about inverting some of the screen roles and just letting Austin work more and letting D'Lo work more. But if you could get a different level of D'Lo, like the D'Lo that you got against New Orleans, who also doesn't really have those types of guards that really can, or wings that can really bother him in the same way, that to me is a really interesting way to attack here. And, you know, maybe just not going back to the same stuff that hasn't worked against Denver,
right,
especially in crunch time, would be something that the Lakers should be paying pretty close attention to.
This is part of the meat on the bone I was talking about earlier, Mike, where it's like part of the value of those regular season games is you get to try different things and will this work or will that work? And there wasn't a whole heck of a lot of that. Some of it, of course, is dictated by injuries and this guy wasn't available that game, but this guy was. But to answer the idea of how did Lakers score versus their starting five, AD and Austin are the two guys that come to the front of mind. With AD in particular, I think how he's moving is going to be essential in this series. He's the guy, especially that from an on-ball creation type of standpoint, that's the part of the game I'm most concerned about is when LeBron is out of the game and AD is in at the end of those first and third quarters. And we've got five players on the court who are capable to very good on the offensive end, but there isn't really a guy who can beat a really good defender across from them consistently in a lot of those groups. And so with Anthony Davis, I think that his athleticism is going to be one of the headlines of this series. I think that he needs to be able to be a lob threat against Jokic. He needs to be able to get catches on the move. I think that really locks a lot of the other things into place. And then on the perimeter with Austin, we've talked about that crunch time offense and the Lakers are still finding themselves. Our best look is the one where Austin has the ball in his hands, which is funny because the other 43 minutes, it can be hit and miss, although he's gotten much better as an on-ball player over the course of this season. But over the last 5 minutes of the game, it really reverts to a style of play that's very ISO ball type of style that is part of the reason why we've lost those games. But Austin is our best option in those D, and the Austin LeBron pick and roll is probably our best two-man action.
I saw a graphic the other day, and I'm so sorry, I cannot recall who posted
Crumple
it,
jumper.
But it was like, it might have been, but it was the top 15 or 20 on-ball scorers in the league in terms of points per possession, and Austin was on that list at like 14th or 15th or 16th.
Yeah.
He was on the list.
And everybody else is like an all-star type of player.
Yes. And it was like 1.03 points per possession as an on-ball player. And to your point, Pete, Austin is going to be important. The thing that I am most interested in is how much the Lakers leverage their five-out style in order to try to compromise Jokic. And what does that mean for Anthony Davis as a perimeter-based player against a behemoth big man who has quick feet and quick hands, but can still be vulnerable to being put in space and have shots taken over the top of him? And so let's go to break here. And I want to zero in on Anthony Davis, and I want to zero in on the three-guard attack that the Lakers have, with LeBron James as being one of the guards. Go back and watch the 2019-20 series between the Lakers and the Nuggets, or just the run in general that Anthony Davis had, and you will see a lot of, oh, damn, there's Anthony Davis, but is that really Kevin Durant? Now, it's not the same. It's not like, oh, the big sweeping crossover and all of that stuff. But it's very much a mid-range isolation, working with the ball and then beating a dude. The best version of Anthony Davis against Jokic is the player who goes fast.
Yes.
So athleticism is super important, but so is athleticism of the brain. Yeah. It is moving quickly, deciding quickly, being decisive on what the next thing is, because Jokic is one of the most deliberate and cerebral players that you will find. And in order to beat him, you have to be, oh no, I'm not waiting here. The move that I think of most about Anthony Davis against Jokic is the quick post up, turn and face, rip baseline drive, reverse layup. It's actually the play he hurt his foot against him in the season after the championship. It was on like Valentine's Day weekend, right before the All-Star break in Denver. He beat him with that same exact move. It was a move he used against him a bunch the year before in the bubble, in the playoff series. And it's that sort of move to me that is symbolic of the play that he needs to make against Jokic more often, rather than the battering ram. I'm going to try to lower my shoulder in. I'm going to be deliberate and try to then get to a spot and shoot over the top of you. It's got to be quick twitch. I'm AD. I used to be a guard, and I'm going to attack you. And if we're starting with AD first, I think that is the style that he needs to play.
Yeah. So AD and being able to attack and kind of get going and all that and find a rhythm is, of course, super important. Part of that to me is just like, you know, how much can you scheme for that versus how much does AD decide in the way that he's going to attack? And like, how much of that is game plan? And I don't know the answer to that. So Pete, weigh in on that in a second. The other part of this that I want to introduce is just like, what is the difference between these two teams? Not just from last year to this year, but even from the last time that they played. And is it kind of a major one? And we hinted at it earlier, but is it Gabe Vincent coming in and being able to defend Jamal Murray in a different way to an extent? Like, is it Rui just being in a different rhythm than he was at that time? D'Angelo Russell didn't play in that last matchup. Is it Denver being down an additional player? Because remember, Mike Malone and I get it. He likes to be called Michael. I may call him Mike on this podcast from time to time. He really likes to trim down to like six guys, seven maybe. And so one of those guys is not Bruce Brown. Is it Peyton Watson? So I'm interested in that as well. But Pete, before I sidetrack us on that, maybe you can get into Darius's point about AD and the specific attack on Jokic and like how that could go.
Well, really, just with AD, it's either you got to go over him or you got to go around him. Darius really covered it, but he's got to be a lob threat, but he's also got to be able to beat him off of the dribble with foot speed. Now, one of the ways that Denver plays is that they've got really good perimeter defense, and so they're going to consolidate the paint and still be able to get out and get a decent contest up. And so I think that AD being athletic in this series is a big linchpin. Now, with respect to where are the places they can make up the deficit and not get swept, right? Not to be able to win not just games, but also the series. And that's part of what I think is encouraging about this series is that there are a bunch of places where it can happen, right? They don't have Bruce Brown. They don't have Jeff Green, who's an important vet on that team as well, who's part of that seven-man rotation. The Lakers know who they are a lot better. They've settled in on a starting lineup. Gabe Vincent guarding Jamal Murray. Like, to me, Jamal Murray, I think super highly of him, and we'll get into him a little bit later. I don't think Gabe is going to be able to stop him by any means. I do think that he's our best guy at that job, and that will be helpful. But I do think that just him being, like, we haven't played a game against them, D, where every guy that's played has been a legit playoff rotation guy. They're the game on Kobe's statue night. Max started that game. Cam got almost 20 minutes in the most recent game against them. We were a jumbled mess at the beginning of the season anyway. And so like Gabe's ability to come in and be a pro that definitely belongs out there is it matters, right? And it'll be the first time that we have that day.
So I want to then go back and we put Anthony Davis to the side a little bit. We sort of know what's expected of him. You mentioned that Denver has really good perimeter defense, and they do. They're very big at their guard spots. Murray is not a small guard by any means. Like, I remember when they put Dennis Schroeder on him, and it's just like, oh, you're not nearly big enough.
He didn't feel him at all. Yeah.
For this dude. at all. The Lakers also start big guards. Austin and D'Lo are not small dudes. They are not the strongest players, but they're not small. The thing that I'm looking for is where are the attack points and who guards who. So I'm almost positive KCP is going to defend D'Lo. Like, I'm almost positive about that. Almost every team treats D'Lo now like he is the main perimeter player. And they deploy their resources accordingly. In the first New Orleans games, it was Herb Jones. In the next New Orleans game, it was Brandon Ingram. They were not putting CJ McCollum on him. So to speak to your point about Austin Reeves, Austin's very likely going to have Jamal Murray on him. And this is where I think the Lakers need to use LeBron and Austin's chemistry together in two-man game to start to be the entry point for the Lakers offense. Some people would think, oh, well, you got to put Jokic in the screen. I disagree.
That's the league leader in deflections. He is great at all those little pocket passes. If you're operating in space and they can seal down that paint, he's going to really navigate that well.
I want the Lakers to try to put Aaron Gordon in screen actions to see what they decide to do in terms of hedging and how are you going to hedge out and recover to LeBron? Are you going to switch there? What is the action there? I want to use LeBron more as a screener in this series, or whoever Gordon is guarding, use that player to set more ball screens for Austin Reeves or whoever has Jamal Murray on him. I think that is an entry point. Am I off base there, Pete, for that being me, that is the best entry point for the Lakers offense within the starting group, at least.
I love that, D, and that I think that's going to be a super critical action. And Aaron Gordon is very well equipped to be that big wing that can guard LeBron on the ball. Now, one of the things that Denver can be vulnerable to is athletic size and speed kind of going to the rim. And so LeBron being able to both be that on-ball guy, but they've got Gordon as a good answer for that. If you move him off of the ball, I do think, Mike, that you change the equation for them and sort of dilute some of the effectiveness of Gordon as an on-ball player.
It's important to remember that they're probably going to play Aaron Gordon as their backup center and just not play an actual backup center. So they're probably not going to play DeAndre.
Which they didn't do a ton of during the regular season, Mike. That's something they did last playoffs, but not as much this year.
Yeah, but that's what I mean when I say that they like to really cut things down. And they're, so to me, a real key time in these games is going to be the second unit that has been excellent lately. And it's to start the second quarter, to start the fourth quarter. Like LeBron anchoring the unit with Jackson Hayes, who comes in and just flies around. And like that group, to me, that's going to be the time that Jokic is sitting.
Yeah.
And like Jokic has been so consistent that it's been remarkable in these matchups. I can't remember the last time he had a bad like half against the Lakers. Maybe in the bubble, you know, so there's something about, and that's why he's the MVP again this year. Like he has really brought it. He answered the question that I asked to start the season, which a lot of times when you are the defending champion, there is something in certain players, and especially like the best players in the team, where all right, that next regular season going to just take it easy a little bit, and then try to build back up in the playoffs. And I didn't think Jokic really did that. I thought he kept a pretty sustainable level. That is just him, right? This is how he plays. And he's going to do that. So what's the best way then to for the Lakers to almost work around that you just can't assume that it's not going to be there. But can the rest of the Nuggets stay as consistent as they have been? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think that the Lakers are better right now than they were even when they played in February. And the gap has just narrowed some. So like if the margin for error was already close enough that the Lakers almost won these games, and again, it sounds silly when you consider that they've lost eight in a row, but can they just flip that? Can they put some pressure on Denver? Can they go in and just split these games, you know, and then all of a sudden and then get the crowd behind them when they return for game three? Like, I do think that that's possible. And to get back to the basketball, if I'm not going to assume that Jokic is going to suddenly struggle like with some different look, but it's just I get right back to that LeBron and thinking of how much more can he play as a little bit more point guard and a little bit more orchestrating how Russell and Reeves can attack and how AD can attack and kind of lead the energy in the game that way, you know, as opposed to how just the way that he has played all season, which has been great on offense. But I'm just wondering if the because of Gordon and Jokic's presence, if he just has a little bit of a shift to those guards and to making Denver really have to deal with them, then that's interesting to me. And, you know, I don't Dinwiddie and Vincent, I don't know the degree that they can play into this. I don't know that the minutes are going to be high enough, especially on offenses outside of kind of spacing and shooting from the perimeter and letting them focus on defense, which where both of them have been good. So that's what brings me kind of back to this Reeves and Russell thing, as I'm not sure that Denver has as many answers for that as they do for the way that LeBron is attacked on his own.
I do think that we should spotlight the fact that the Lakers are going to need D'Angelo Russell in this series. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to have a post up at Silver Screen and Roll on Friday about this is D'Lo's opportunity.
Yeah.
He's had a very redemptive season to this point, especially going into and then coming out of the trade deadline. He has become the best version of himself on way more nights than he has in any other time that I've watched him throughout his career. And if there's a matchup that I think is going to matter most for him in order for there to be to sort of complete this redemptive arc, right? And for him to be vindicated to a certain extent, it is against the Nuggets. It doesn't mean that the Lakers have to win the series for this to happen, but I think that for him, he is going to want to, and in a certain extent, needs to play well against this team. And if he does play well against this team, he gives the Lakers a legitimate shot, because there is a quality to his shot making that is of the difference making variety. Some guys make shots, it's just like, oh, great, nice shot. His shots can turn the tide of a basketball game. And that shot he hit in the final minute of the New Orleans game, coming off of a steal that he got. These are sort of high-level engagement plays that I think he's going to need in the playoffs in general, particularly against a locked-in Nuggets team.
Let me ask you guys a quick question about this. So KCP, he's been getting some all-defensive buzz, and I get it. He's been really good. He's been really consistent. Where do you think they deploy him relative to, now that they don't have Bruce Brown, how much is he on Austin? How much is he on D'Lo, and do you think that can you sort of just attack the other way and just try to make sure that you're going at Murray a little bit more, right? Depending on what they do in that case.
I mean, that's basically what Darius was saying earlier, right? Is that KCP is almost certain to be deployed on D'Lo. Although if the Lakers do go that route of like, actually Austin's our point guard, if you're going to do that. But I do think that is the route that's available, Mike, is that you can just go to the other guy if that's something that you want to avoid. I also think that having Rui in that starting spot, D'Lo is one of the biggest beneficiaries of that, D, in that last season when with the three guard look to start out with Dennis, and obviously that was just one game, but in that first game, he had a lot of Michael Porter Jr. on him, and his height and length really bothered him, because D'Lo's not a guy that's going to be able to blow by that type of guy. And usually his advantage over the guy across from him is over the top. He's both tall, has long arms, and has a really quick gather on his jumper so he can get his shot up. It's harder to do against a 6'10 guy in Michael Porter Jr. But I think that,
by the way, that impacted the other side a lot as well last year too. Remember?
Oh,
like the
totally.
First couple games where you're like, when LeBron isn't on Michael Porter Jr. and he's just comfortably shooting right over the top the whole first several games.
And that's not a problem that we've solved, Mike. That's something, again, he shot 10 for 10 in the last game. We have a Michael Porter Jr. problem. But I do think that Rui starting, that takes somebody off of D'Lo in a way where he has a more comfortable type of matchup. So that's how I see that. But I do think that bench group that you were talking about, Mike, to put it simply, yes. For one, D'Lo, he has more on-ball opportunities in that group, I think, than in the others. And then, to put it simply, the part of the game I'm most concerned about are those non-LeBron groups at the end of the first and third quarters. And then the part of the game that I think is our biggest opportunity, which you hit on, Mike, is the start of the second and fourth quarters with LeBron on. That unit plays really well. That's probably that's easily our best bench unit, is that group that starts those two quarters, that group that you referred to, Mike. And that is, as you said, when Jokic is out of the game. So to me, a big part of this series, D, is going to be survive that last part of the first and third quarter and then make your move at the start of the second and fourth.
One of the most important parts of this series will be, can the Lakers win the minute when Jokic sits? Mm-hmm. Last season during the playoffs, that did not happen. Oftentimes, Denver extended their lead or they played neutral, and that allowed Denver to basically be comfortable and allow Jokic to get his normal amount of rest and sometimes even longer stretches of rest and be fresh for down the stretch in order to close out the Lakers in his two-man game with Murray. This year, Denver, again, they're like minus 8 point whatever points per 100 possessions when Jokic sits. Now, during the playoffs, you can expect his minutes load to go up into the 38, 40, 42 minute range. But if he sits for 8 minutes a game, you got to win those 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And a part of those, and a part of that stretch will be those second and fourth quarter minutes when LeBron is on the court with Jackson Hayes and Torian Prince and Gabe Vincent and D'Lo. Mm-hmm. Those are the groups that need to cook, and those are the groups that need to win. And I think, Pete, as we transition out of this pod and into tomorrow's pod, and we talk about winning the parts of the game now with your defense and mm-hmm. what you can do defensively, I think those bench units are also going to be critical, and finding the right personnel groupings in order to hold down a dynamic Denver offense is, if the Lakers are going to have a chance in the series, it for sure has to happen. But if you listen nationally, even winning one game would be amazing for these underdog Lakers. And so, to a certain extent, I'm rolling my eyes, but on another extent, it's just like, this is the truth. The Lakers need to show that they can beat.
Oh, of course.
I think that they can, but it's going to have to happen as much on the defensive end, even though we highlighted that you got to score with this team. I think the Lakers are as equipped as they've ever been to do that, though.
Well, I suppose this is a whole other pod, but just the various ways that you can defend Jokic and when to trap, when to blitz, like who to start on him with, how often to use LeBron on him. And we saw what defending Zion did to LeBron's legs as the game went on. How much can Rui hold up? How much is that? So there's a whole thing there, and there's no great answer, but I do think that some things are better than others. So let's hit that in a separate pod. But, you know, Jokic, of course, and this, I always sometimes just like to state the obvious, like, he is the whole thing that makes them what they are. He is what unlocks Jamal Murray, and he is what unlocks Aaron Gordon, and he is what unlocks Michael Porter Jr. So he's the guy. And I think there are some, I wonder what the Lakers have learned from these last eight games.
Yep.
And what worked the best, what worked the worst, what any new wrinkles, any zone, like, so that's a whole thing that I think we'll have to spend some more time on.
And we'll do that tomorrow as we preview the series from the Lakers on defense, that type of perspective. All right, we will be back then to discuss, but until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound is Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.